Penguin Random House Audio presents Our Kindred Creatures, How Americans Came to Feel the Way They Do About Animals by Bill Wasik and Monica Murphy. Read for you by Tanis Peronto. For America's Veterinarians, Past, Present, and Future. Introduction. A new type of goodness. They often were heard before they were seen, and theirs was the sound of American abundance. Alexander Wilson, an early ornithologist, heard them while on a trip down the Ohio River. A loud rushing roar, which at first he took to be a tornado about to overwhelm the spot where he stood. In his novel, The Chainbearer, James Fenimore Cooper compared it to the trampling of thousands of horses on a beaten road. John James Audubon likened their distinctive din to a hard gale at sea passing through the rigging of a close-reefed vessel. After a guided trip to a Wisconsin roost in 1871, one rattled hunter wrote of his experience. The sound was condensed terror. Imagine 1,000 threshing machines running under full headway, accompanied by as many steamboats groaning off steam, along with an equal quota of RR trains passing through covered bridges. Imagine these massed into a single flock, and you possibly have a faint conception of the terrific roar. The source of these staggering sounds was the passenger pigeon, which traveled in flocks so numerous and dense that they blotted out the sun for hours at a time as they passed overhead. When the birds converged upon a stretch of forest to roost or nest, several inches of excrement quickly accumulated beneath the straining, burdened trees. Under the weight of so many bunched up blue copper bodies, mature limbs snapped off and crashed to the ground, whereupon distressed survivors shrieked and flapped back into the canopy to settle anew onto even more crowded branches, repeating the cycle. Audubon described a typical wooded roosting site as a scene of uproar and confusion. Their tendency to assemble into multitudes of millions, or possibly, according to some awestruck witnesses, billions, made the passenger pigeon an amazement to North America's European settlers and their descendants. Density made the pigeons easy to hunt, and their profusion made hunters even more rapacious in the harvest. Whenever the pigeons alighted en masse, excited locals arrived with rifles to fire into the flock, with long poles to poke the pigeons from their perches, with axes for chopping down trees full of nests. Mark Twain, in a memoir, recalled clubs being the weapons of choice when he was a boy. For weeks, the local people feasted on nothing but pigeons, stewed with salt pork, roasted with gravy, stuffed with parsley, and braised in wine, baked inside of a sweet potato, piled into a pie. What they didn't or couldn't eat right away, they preserved or fed to their hogs. Trappers devised a spring pole apparatus for capturing live birds. Packs of pigeons were lured by one or more tethered decoy stool pigeons to a rectangle of ground spread generously with grain or salt. When the trap bed was flush with fowl, the trapper triggered the device. Flinging a net over the scrum, a single throw of the net could trap several hundred birds at once. Once captured, the birds would usually be killed on the scene, their necks snapped with a pair of pincers, and then salted and barreled for shipment around the country by rail. But quite a few of them would be shipped alive to sportsmen's clubs to be used in trap shoots, events often drawing large crowds of spectators in which hunters would compete to see how many birds they could kill. Often these shoot-offs would end with mortally wounded birds littering the field after other injured victims had flown or staggered off to an even more drawn-out misery. By 1879, a group of Americans had come to believe that the suffering of the humble, seemingly inexhaustible passenger pigeon was due for reconsideration. Among them was George Thorndike Angell, president of one of the nation's most prominent animal advocacy groups, the Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. He himself had spent little time on the pigeon shooting issue during his early years as an activist, but the brutality of the tournaments had clearly begun to weigh on him. In his group's publication, he challenged readers on their hypocrisy. A man will sit up all night and watch a favorite horse suffering from a bruise or sprain. A woman will cry herself to sleep over injuries by a prowling cat, to a pet canary, and yet they are never haunted by wounded pigeons with broken legs or maimed wings, left to die of starvation, helpless and fluttering. He had no doubt, he wrote, that gentlemen who shoot pigeons and ladies who delight in looking on believe it to be a harmless amusement which hurts nobody. But he cautioned that God saw it differently, noting that the wounded pigeons from these shooting tournaments were left uncounted and forgotten, save by him who notes the fall of every sparrow. That spring, Angel put forward a bill modeled on one that had passed in Michigan, with language that barred the keeping or using of any birds for the purpose of a target or to be shot at, either for amusement or as a test of skill in marksmanship. He attended a meeting of 400 Boston-area clergy and convinced them to sign a petition against the practice, submitting their holy endorsements as a counterweight to all the outraged shooters who had begun lobbying legislators against the bill. In the end, the measure passed the Massachusetts State Senate by a margin of 2-1 and was signed into law in early April 1879. Soon thereafter, Angel secured what he believed to be the world's first conviction for a pigeon shoot. 6 young gentlemen had to pay around $60 in fines. It was a victory that Angel would celebrate for the rest of his life. But today, one cannot see it as anything other than bittersweet. The disappearance of trap shoots from American cities came far too late for the passenger pigeon. By the 1890s, it no longer alighted to roost by the thousands, let alone the millions. And soon after the turn of the 20th century, when a young man in Indiana shot the last known wild specimen, the passenger pigeon, that beautiful symbol of boundless American excess, was officially harvested to extinction. On an evening in that same spring of 1879, nearly 1,500 people gathered in Tremont Temple, an auditorium in the heart of Boston, to celebrate the 11th anniversary of the Massachusetts SPCA's founding. At 7:30, after some religious preambles, a unison reading from Scripture, "Ask now the beasts, and they will teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee," an opening prayer and a hymn, George Angel stepped to the podium. His theme was the movement against cruelty to animals and its accomplishments, which to him seemed nothing less than miraculous. In 1866, when his fellow pioneer for the cause, Henry Berg, had founded the nation's first animal protection society in New York, many states had no laws against the maltreatment of animals, and those on the books were woefully unenforced. The notion of animals and their welfare as a cause was absent, undiscussed, unconsidered in America. As Angel pointed out from the podium when his Massachusetts group celebrated its first anniversary in 1869, it still was one of just 3 in the country, the 3rd in Philadelphia, having been started up through the resolute energies of Caroline Earle White, the other major figure in America's founding generation of animal activists. A mere decade later, Angel noted, there were now 93 animal protection groups in the country, located in a majority of states in the Union. Many of these societies, following the lead set by Berg's group in New York, which Berg had presumptuously named the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, ASPCA, despite its having jurisdiction only within the state, had pressured legislatures to pass anti-cruelty laws that the organizations had written, which gave them enforcement powers to arrest alleged wrongdoers and haul them before courts. The Massachusetts SPCA now had 3 full-time agents patrolling the streets of Boston, and a network of 465 other law enforcement allies around.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?